Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those about them. This week, Disrespect interviewed Dr. Stefanos Kyrkianides of the University of Rochester Medical Center about his findings in relation to pain and its reinforcement of injury in diseases like arthritis. Dr. Stefanos Kyrkianides, J. Daniel Septalny, Chair of Orthodontics.
Yeah, J. Daniel Septalny was the founder of the department, and I have an endowed position in his name. That means people raised more than $2 million towards the chair's position. My position, yeah.
Good. Okay. I was very interested in the news that I read about your discovery related to pain and its role in illness. I think everybody's been told by doctors it's just pain, suck it up, I'm busy and I have more important things to attend to. But your research shows that pain is itself a very important thing for patients who have chronic pain, right?
That's correct. And if you allow me to give you a two-sentence introduction,
yeah.
When we started studying in a mouse model of cartilage disease as a model of arthritis pain, and we developed new methods to control the pain, we discovered accidentally that not only the pain went away with our therapy, but also the degree of joint pathology decreased by 40 or 50%.
Wow.
That made us think that perhaps the two are interconnected.
Yeah. And this happened basically as a byproduct of another study?
Yeah, that was a study that was published in May of 2007.
Right.
So this one summarizes studies that addressed why we were observing this simultaneous healing of arthritis together with the amelioration of pain.
I noticed the article says that some drugs that may work, such as acetaminophen, don't require a prescription, but others do. So this is true of a broad range of pain relievers? It seems that literally the symptom of pain is the cause?
Pain is an interpretation of neurochemical signals that come from joints into the spinal cord.
Okay.
And from there, they are transferred higher up to the cortex. So pain is the cortex interpretation of what's happening at the spinal cord.
Okay.
And there are a number of medicines that aim to block the processing of pain at the spinal cord that can be beneficial in the case we're describing.
I didn't know that's how they worked. What are the medications?
Usually doctors prescribe general anti-inflammatory drugs
okay.
for arthritis, but those, although they have some effectiveness in the joints, they do not easily target the areas of interest in the spinal cord due to the presence of a barrier, which is called the blood-brain barrier.
Right.
There are other classes.
They don't cross that barrier, is that right?
They do not cross the barrier easily. Very difficult.
Okay.
But there are other classes of drugs that do cross. Acetaminophen or Tylenol crosses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are other prescription drugs that also cross and have an effect.
Do they have a characteristic in common besides this? I mean, do they have like a characteristic you could describe? When you want to raise the question with your doctor, you could say, is it a good idea for me to have a pain reliever that crosses the blood-brain barrier? You could say, is it a good idea for me to have acetaminophen? Or is the more succinct way to describe the category of pain relievers that you've identified as helpful?
Oh, there are a number of pain relievers. So acetaminophen is the simplest over-the-counter. It is promoted by the pharmaceutical industry as a potent pain controller. You know, people can buy it.
It's often combined with codeine, yeah.
Yeah, Tylenol number 3 is what you're referring. Then we have opioid drugs like morphine and this type of medicines that are very effective in controlling pain. And they are prescribed, but we don't like prescribing them because of their serious side effects.
Yeah, they're addictive, yeah.
Especially over a prolonged period of time. In cases of chronic pain, physicians sometimes are prescribing antidepressants because those stimulate particular systems in the central nervous system that actually not only produce this euphoric effect, but also limit as a side effect, as a byproduct, pain, because they target the processing of pain at the spinal cord.
Oh, very good.
So these are like 3-4 different examples.
Okay.
I think the main impact here is that we should not just say, you know, it hurts, but it's going to go away.
Right.
Because when, in fact, it hurts is when it's
getting worse.
Appearing to be damaging.
Yeah. Well, how far did your results take you in this conclusion, and what remains to be studied or proven?
We have discovered the mechanism at the basic level of how events in the spinal cord where pain is processed are linked etiologically with events in joints,
okay,
leading to arthritis.
All right.
And we have a few ideas. We're in the process of doing it,
right,
to move forward in testing, in fact, other drugs that exist but currently are not designed for pain management, arthritis management. However, they, we believe, based on our research, would be beneficial for controlling the damaging effect of pain on joints.
So new uses for old drugs with proven records.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Has this study been published?
Yeah, it was published 8 days ago in the Journal of Arthritis and Rheumatism.
Okay.
Which is the official publication of the American Rheumatologic Society.
Okay. I guess you were taken by surprise by the original occurrence of these stats. How did you spot them? Were you examining the condition of joints in relation to pain relief? No, you weren't, but you did spot it.
Well, we were. We were very systematic in our studies, and we always tried to include in our evaluations all the different components that we're either manipulating or we are targeting.
Yeah.
So in this instance, we systematically included areas of the central nervous system that we were targeting.
Right.
Peripheral nerves, ganglia, but we also analyzed the joints themselves.
Right. And now you're thinking of some new tests of existing drugs to expand the range of tools to create this effect.
That is correct. Yeah, I'm not at liberty to disclose
details
about that, but that's exactly what's happening as we speak.
The article I have by Anne McElroy in the Globe and Mail says other researchers are zeroing in on genes that determine why some people suffer more intensely than others. Is it possible that your new study may come across evidence of that, why some people suffer more intensely?
Well, I think disease is always a combination of what we call a genetic predisposition. That is reflected in the gene mutations you're referring to.
Right.
But it's also combined with what we call environmental factors.
Right.
Anywhere from how we use our joints in our body, to whether we have injuries, to whether we take in substances through food that are beneficial or actually are detrimental to the health of the body. So, yes, genetics does have an important component here.
Okay. Does that lead to any new recommendations for people who suffer osteoarthritis?
Well, I think the conclusion that we took from this was that the general anti-inflammatory drugs, as they're frequently given, are not adequate for the management of arthritis.
Right.
That we need to expand our regimen to include pain control.
Yeah.
As well as the inflammation of the joints.
Yeah. And now's a good time to take a short break from the interview. Jack McVeigh and his band, Bartender Boogie. You've been listening to Stefanos Kyrkinides, a dental surgeon from University of Rochester Medical Center, talk about the importance of dealing with pain in halting and reversing the deformation of joints in illnesses with chronic pain.
It's important to get started early because there appears to be a window during which this intervention is successful, and there must be a cutoff point after which our intervention
is too late.
Would be too late, yeah.
Oh, okay. But you haven't identified that yet.
See, every patient would probably be a separate case because there's such a variability between the way disease presents from one individual to the other.
Yeah.
So I guess the recommendation would be as early as one can do.
Okay. So probably as soon as you suspect arthritis and then proceed with the diagnosis while you administer the medication.
Well, consider this. People don't go to their physician because they happen to have an x-ray of their joint and thus diagnosed with arthritis. They seek help because they are either in discomfort or immobilized by pain.
Yeah.
So pain is actually one of the first symptoms that alerts people about a condition and propels them to seek help.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, right. And so at that point, an astute physician would probably administer pain relievers.
Yeah, combination or
while they proceed with the diagnosis. Yeah.
Yeah, but also it requires education of the public that if their joint is hurting, don't just let it go.
That's true. That's quite surprising. The article I read also says that there's crosstalk between the spine and the joint. This implies that the feedback goes both ways, that the joint not only signals the spine that it's in trouble, but the spine signals the joint. Is this what you're talking about in terms of deformation and damage?
Yeah, the two parts, the joint in the periphery and the spinal cord in the central nervous system, appear to talk to each other and feed forward. So in fact, what there is, there's a perpetual circle or cycle that keeps going on, and as it continues to go on, it exacerbates the conditions.
I see. So there really is a time factor here. It gets exponentially worse over time.
That's correct. So our research so far shows from this paper and previous papers that if we break this crosstalk or this cycle, then we can allow the joint to express some of its healing properties. And hence we see some recovery.
What are the healing mechanisms, I mean, in general terms, and how do they relate to their sort of attempt at restoring them?
Well, research shows that there is a category of biological molecules. An example is TGF-beta that is has an anabolic effect, if you will, in tissue damage. And what that does is expresses reparatory intentions. However, over time, I think the destructive portion of the process wins, and we have what we call arthritis.
Oh, I see.
If we were able to control the disruptive portion of this equation, perhaps we would allow some of that other healing anabolic processes to express themselves.
So it's like a competition between information flows.
Yeah, it's a sort of a yin-yang. That's not very clear yet, but that's where we're looking at.
So you have one or the other. Does this have implications for the surgical treatment of arthritis where the joint is taken apart and scraped? Does this have implications for the artificial growth of real cartilage, which is now being studied at McMaster and is apparently being studied in Scotland as well, the Royal Naval Hospital?
I don't have a clear answer for that. We are just starting to examine the process via surgical procedures, so I don't have a clear answer for that. But I suspect, my suspicion is that this is always present.
Which is always present?
In joints as well as other tissues.
Oh, this tendency.
This fit-forward cycle.
Right. So it can be activated in anybody, and it can probably be... If acted on early enough, it could probably be interrupted in anybody, too.
That's the path we are following right now, and we're examining also this principle in other systems.
Yeah, I saw that you believe the mechanism's common to other diseases involving chronic pain, fibromyalgia and others.
Mm, yeah. That's our belief. It hasn't been proven yet, though.
No. In your belief, would that apply to many painful invisible disabilities, like Crohn's and stuff like that?
Oh, that's way out of my field of expertise. I'm
right.
Sorry.
Those are not joints.
Yeah, but it is an inflammatory process, Crohn's. Nevertheless, it has also an autoimmune component.
Oh, so your study does not take into account the autoimmune component or not of this illness. It might be, there might be some, but it's not within the scope of your study.
That's right. These questions fall outside the scope of our discovery, but it is possible that it's present.
Yeah, so you're dealing with the physical deformation and how to arrest and repair it.
At this point, yes, sir.
How far, I was sir when I was 28 and started to go bald. My name is Jeff, and I'm sorry. Yeah, how far are we from incorporation of this into mainstream treatment? Now, I understand from the point of the study, it's every doctor's option to include pain relievers. What will a further study provide for the administration of these treatments? Just a wider confirmation of a wider applicability of the treatment and confirmation of wider use of different pain relievers?
Well, in the United States, because I'm not sure exactly the laws in Canada or in Europe, in the United States, new discoveries have to be cleared by the FDA.
Right.
I'm sure there are regulatory agencies in Canada and Europe as well. However, the big picture, as you just explained it, I think that can be evaluated through the physicians right now because these medicines are available, they are approved, and they are used.
Yeah.
It's just that perhaps they should be included early enough in the management of arthritis.
Yeah. I know in Canada, for instance, it's up to a doctor's judgment to use an existing drug for a purpose for which it's not intended. It's neither encouraged nor penalized unless there's a proven adverse effect. I imagine that's the same in the States. If in the doctor's judgment a drug with proven track record is decided to be used for something new, he has the freedom to do that?
There is some latitude. There's always restrictions. However, that's not the best approach to investigate or to perform clinical research to ask
the question. Of course not. Of course not.
Does it help? So usually pharmaceutical companies are the ones that pick up the tab in order for us to get an answer. Does this really help or not?
Yeah. I guess that raises the question, and it's not meant as a reflection on you, but how do you deal with pharmaceutical companies' expectations of results favorable to the growth of their income and the scientific need to be accurate? How do you deal with that?
Well, my laboratory and my research program are funded by the federal government.
Okay.
So it's purely academic, and we don't rely on private money to push our research forward or publish our data. So we have the luxury of this freedom.
All right.
And we continue down that path. And through our publications, we hope to be able to communicate the results to the scientific community and further out.
So your work would be the foundation of any further work by the pharmaceutical companies then?
Clinical trials of compounds is a very expensive undertake. So usually that's what happens.
Okay. What else would you tell people who may be suffering from arthritis and are interested in your research and maybe have never gone to their doctor before and said, have you considered or questioned the treatment even in a constructive way? A lot of people still rely on the physician's authority as the last word, and yet sometimes the doctor is glad to be aware of something that might have crossed his path, but he may not have had time to evaluate or find a patient willing to accept it.
Well, the message is that when we experience pain from one or more joints, its initial intention is to protect us, and we should pay attention
okay.
to that sensation.
All right, so it's kind of a red light, and we shouldn't ignore it. Don't just push back the pain. Listen to the pain and take it up with your doctor.
Yeah, be alert and manage it.
And encourage your doctor to manage it in the way that the research is pointing. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about this new discovery of yours?
No, I'm all done. I'm a quarter Canadian.
Okay.
So I'm glad to be speaking to you today.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you came on the air today, Doctor. Thanks very much. We'll put this together tonight.
Thank you much.
It'll be also posted to the web at radioforall.net, radio, the number four, all.net. You can pick it up off the web at that address if you're interested.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Stefanos Kyrkinides, a dental surgeon from University of Rochester Medical Center, talk about the importance of dealing with pain in halting and reversing the deformation of joints in illnesses with chronic pain. Now, to take us nearer to the halfway point of the show, Albert Ammons and Pete Johnson moving the boogie. Disrespect brings you the news items from the last week. First Wednesday, November the 12th. Real life lessons from the street, Carol Gore and the Star. One of the delegates brought along a sleeping bag. He stretched it out and fell asleep whenever the proceedings bored him. Another lost his train of thought at the microphone, apologized, and said he might have to go back to his shelter for his medications. A third, clean after years of cocaine use, urged the others to follow her example, but proudly added that her addiction had never impaired her sexual performance. Hart House, the cultural nucleus of the University of Toronto, has hosted some odd events in its 89-year history, but even by its bohemian standards, last week's gathering of 120 homeless and formerly homeless people was extraordinary. It was called Homeless to Home. The all-day session was organized by the Institute for Life Course and Aging at the University to tap into the knowledge of the experts on homelessness, people who have lived on the streets, battled addictions and mental illness, trudged from one emergency shelter to the next. Two rules prevailed: no labels and no judging. The delegates broke into small groups to talk about the causes of homelessness: parental abuse, spousal violence, eviction, a workplace accident, mental illness, drug and alcohol dependence. Their frank exchanges offered a glimpse into a world most Torontonians, even housing advocates, know little about. It's a place where social workers are resented and feared. It's a place where scamming the system is accepted. It's a matter of survival. It's a place where women fight desperately to hang on to their children. It's a place from which there often seems no escape. At the end of the day, delegates reconvene to pool their ideas. Now the six-member team of homeless and formerly homeless people who set this up will sift through all the suggestions and set priorities. Those will become the focus of a community action campaign. It's too early to tell whether the unusual blend of academic inquiry and grassroots advocacy will produce policy changes, but the day was a success in its own right. Barriers toppled, stereotypes were cast aside. People left Hart House feeling that their voices mattered. Now, if you're interested in hearing from one of those six formerly homeless and homeless people, we'll contact them, but you have to contact us first. Our email has changed. Yeah. It's Dialogue. We now have a UE on Dialogue at radio.fm. Dialogue@radio.fm. If you want to hear those subjects, let us know, and we'll air them on Disrespect. The Hamilton Spectator. Tuesday, November 11th, affordable nutrition. When money is tight, eating healthy is a struggle. Economists, health researchers, and consumers are struggling as food prices rise and the economy slumps. The World Bank says nearly a billion people live on a dollar a day or less. Even middle-class people struggle to put healthful food on the table. Studies show that junk foods tend to cost less than fruits, vegetables, and other healthful foods, well, whose prices continue to rise. This fall, a couple in Encinitas, California, experimented to find out what it was like to live for a month on just a dollar a day for food. Overnight, their diets changed significantly. The budget forced them to give up many store-bought foods and dinners out. Even bread and canned refried beans were too expensive. Researchers say the experiment reflects many of the challenges that poor people face. When food stamps and money runs low at the end of the month, they often do scrape by on a dollar a day or less. But some don't know how to prepare foods from scratch or lack the time. Many people don't have the knowledge or the time if they're working two jobs, said Adam Drewnowski, director of the Center for Public Health Nutrition at the University of Washington. Last year, Drewnowski led a study published in the Journal of the American Dietetic Association comparing the prices of 370 foods sold at supermarkets in the Seattle area. The study showed that energy-dense junk foods, which pack the most calories and fewest nutrients per gram, were far less expensive than nutrient-rich, lower-calorie foods such as fruit and vegetables. The message for this year and next year is going to be affordable nutrition, Drewnowski said. It's not the food pyramid, it's the budget pyramid. And that credited to New York Times News Service Tara Parker Pope. Well, it's too late to go back and do it over, but a study finds that babies that need devices less likely to be depressed later. Maternity ward incubators may be warming up babies' later outlook on life as well as its tiny body, a University of Montreal study says, by Joseph Hall, health reporter in The Star. We were surprised when we saw the results. We were not expecting them at all, said Dr. David Gurian, the lead study author. The study published this week in the journal Psychiatry Research looked at a larger study of Quebec kindergarten children launched in 1986 that took data on their birth circumstances. It found that infants who needed an incubator stint were far less likely to suffer clinical depression when assessed at 15 and 21 years of age. Some 16% of subjects had been placed in incubators as babies. Only 5% of these infants later developed depression, compared to 9% of those who hadn't needed the devices. While the study offered no theories why the incubator babies had the actual advantage, researchers posed several different theories. For one, the parents of babies who need incubators, having gone through the trauma of having a sick infant, may be more attentive to that child in coming years. It can modify the nature of the relationship between the mother and the child later during the childhood. Maybe she would be more attentive, as may the father. As well, the warm climate and oxygen-controlled environment in an incubator may itself offer a calm start to a baby's life, Gurian says. While he says that more studies need to be done, Gurian adds that the results were robust and that many factors that could have skewered the results, economic circumstances and newborn weight, for example, were controlled for in the results. The study, he says, may yield clues about the early life factors that may lead to depression down the road. Again, if you're interested in this, email us at dialogue, D-I-A-L-O-G-U-E, at radio.fm. Florence Ciccoli, editor, health for The Spectator. Proof at last, living near parks boosts health regardless of social class. Access to green spaces, whether they be rolling chalk downs or simple playing fields, has an independently beneficial impact on health and health-related behavior that counteracts the effects of poverty and inner-city deprivation, research by scientists found. The links between serious illness and poverty are well established, but this is the first time scientists have systematically shown that the health gap between rich and poor can be halved with the help of green spaces. When all deaths were analyzed, the gulf in health between the rich and the poor in the greenest areas in Britain was roughly half of that observed in the least green parts of the country, according to findings published in the medical journal The Lancet. The difference between those living in the greenest and least green areas was largest when looking at deaths from circulatory diseases. The authors of the study, Richard Mitchell of Glasgow University and Frank Popham of the University of St. Andrews, believe the findings are strong enough for planning authorities to consider making green spaces available on grounds of health and well-being. The two scientists assessed the entire population of England under the retirement age, a total of 41 million people, and obtained the cause of death for 366,348 people who died between 2001 and 2005 to analyze the links between fatal illnesses and access to green spaces. They conclude the implications of this study are clear. Environments that promote good health might be crucial in the fight to reduce health inequalities. Very briefly now, a short slice from next week's show. And tune in next week to find out what we do with the noises of ongoing construction around the station in the background.
The approaches that we use for the business development program and for the savings program specifically aren't new to Welcome In.
Okay.
They're new in terms of being newly popular, but it's sort of always been the ethos of that place. So
what is it that you do, and you say it's newly popular? What have you done to make them newly popular?
I don't know if we can take credit for that, or
okay.
If it's just the way the tide is turning. People are starting to understand that income-focused poverty alleviation programs are really too one-dimensional to create lasting change. And what we've been doing and what's becoming more and more obvious is that asset-focused programs are much more effective in terms of effecting long-term change. And that's mainly because an asset-based program allows people to create change within themselves and within their communities, whereas income measures tend to be more unidirectional, and they are often too shallow to create real change. So
income-based measures would mean like, would you like to be a cook? Would you like to be
sort of
a delivery man?
It's that cliche. If you give a person a fish versus teaching them to fish. I mean, giving a person a fish would be an income-based approach,
okay.
Whereas teaching them to fish and doing that kind of capacity development and creating a community of people who fish and sustain themselves in that way would be a more asset.
But you're not teaching people to be a particular thing.
No, we are offering opportunities for people to take skills that they already have and take assets that they already have. So connections within the community, things that they know and their skills and their talents and their time, and turn them into small business ventures. That's what our BizPlan program is focused on. And the savings plan program that we offer is a more directly financial asset development program where people spend some time learning about money management and developing sort of a financial literacy while they're saving toward one of three asset goals that we support, either post-secondary education or their first home or their own small business startup. And while they're doing that, we're allocating matching funds to facilitate that saving process and reinforce that saving process. So they're learning skills, they're tapping into other networks, social and community networks, and they're being supported in ways that are financial in order to create or to purchase leverageable assets.
But you're already leveraging the assets that they have, aren't you?
Absolutely.
You say their own community networks, their own deposits into the savings program.
Yep.
You're not making a gift of money. You're multiplying their own contribution.
That's exactly it. And it's based on the idea that people have this collection of assets and not financial assets necessarily, assets that are human, the things that they know, assets that are social, how they're connected within the community.
They nevertheless have a value.
They have a value, and that is
or
the
potential
real strength.
Money value.
Absolutely. That's the strength of asset development programs, is that you can take those non-monetary assets and work with them to either build directly monetary assets or to create ways of building resilience within a household or within a community that are a combination of financial and material assets as well as social, community, individual human assets. So it's more, I hate to use the word holistic because it doesn't do it justice, but it's well-rounded.
Encompassing, yeah.
It is, and it's helping people realize that when they come to BizPlan, for example, we have people who are afraid that, I can't start a business. I don't know how to run a business. I just have this hobby or this interest, and I don't know what to do with it beyond there. And it's a question of connecting them with people like the coaches in the BizPlan program who can sort of help light that path a little bit and, offer some feedback and challenge some ideas and help them to develop ideas that are sustainable and ultimately more accomplishable than perhaps sitting alone and trying to develop a plan without sort of the benefit of other people's experience or just conversation with other people. It tends to generate emotional energy and creative energy, and that's an important part of asset development.
And now the weekly recording with Kyler Baluni, blind, in church, in sanctuary, awaiting his second immigration application in Montreal. Kyler Baluni.
Today, Dr. Fido, anyone sent me another phone.
Good.
Yeah, I want to see what's the problem, because is the phone a problem or it's like the antenna problems, Fido? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because when I talk to them, they said to me, no, everything is okay. Maybe the place where you are.
They tell you the one thing you can't change, yeah.
Yeah. And that too, from here we have, from my windows, like big wall.
Oh.
Another church.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking I can't argue with them because I don't know nothing.
Well, you can't go somewhere else and try it, right?
Yeah, when I put my phone other side, now I was on the hall. When you called me, it's a ring.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but if my room, believe me, swear to God, just sometimes I put it just and the same table, just I move it just like 1 inch, it doesn't ring.
Okay. This is ring with my...
It's not happened only with you. It happened with many. Sometimes Father McDonald here from the church call me for outside.
Oh.
Like, man, I found a message from him.
Oh.
Because he knows the problem.
Okay. Well, this is me with my fingers in my mouth here. I'm happy, okay? I stretch my mouth wide, big smile. I'm happy, Carter. There you go.
Okay. Because you thought when the last message you said, I hope you're not sick to pick up the phone.
What did I say?
You said to me, I hope you're not sick to pick up.
No, I'm concerned. You live alone, so I... Yeah. Maybe it sounds stupid to you, but I live alone, too, and I have a good friend who calls regularly, But if she called twice, three times, I didn't pick up the phone, she would be at the door, what's wrong, sort of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I can't come to your door. You're in Montreal. So
now I know
why it picks up the messaging right away. I think you've switched it off, because you were too ill to answer. But no, it is decided. It is decided for you not to answer.
And I want to tell you something else. This is cell phone. It's not home phone. It's going to be home phone. It's easy.
Yeah.
You never, like when you call me, like if the home phone, I never miss the phone when I was in my apartment. But here, I miss like I don't know how many phones.
Yeah, I have a cell.
Every day, I miss like at least 3 or 4 for calls.
You want to hear a funny story?
Uh-huh.
When I moved into my apartment, it was the right price, the right location. It was extra tall, so there was like extra height, and there was extra light. It was extra bright. The windows were big. But the one thing I couldn't
cope with was the phone socket had been painted over.
Yeah.
They painted so much you can't put the phone in. So I think, oh, that's okay. I'll fix that tomorrow. Carter, that was 2 years ago. I'm still using a cell phone.
Yeah.
Remembrance Day. What did you do on Remembrance Day? November 11th.
November 11th?
Yeah. Yesterday.
Yeah, it's yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday. Yeah, what'd you do?
Yesterday I was recording the music.
Okay, good. So how much of your CD did you get recorded yesterday? Half of it? One song, two songs, three songs?
No. I did just one and a half.
Very good.
Yeah, one, just recording one and a half. And
okay.
Yeah, it's...
Can we hear some of it on the air when you get it done?
For sure.
Okay.
No, this time, I want to send you... When I finish the first one...
Yeah.
I want to send it to you.
Okay.
That's my promise. I will send it to you by MP3.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, just I sent it to you, just you can play it.
Okay.
But it's going to be in the French language.
Okay. I had a, there was a band on the, on the, in the station last night, Neon Rain, country band, and they wanted to know what my show was about, and I told them about you, that you were a musician, and that you were waiting for your immigration, and you were in Montreal, and stuck producing CDs in a yeah. room by yourself. Yeah. And they said, oh, do you play CDs on your show? And I said, well... Actually, no, you know, I haven't. I said, but we're waiting for the new CD. And I thought, that's a good idea. We should play some of the new CD on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the name?
Neon Rain was the name of the group.
Okay.
One of them used to play with the Good Brothers, which who are a country group in Canada.
Yeah.
And the States.
Do you know the $100 band?
No.
Okay, it's from Toronto. She's like... the girl, she's her sister is my friend.
Okay.
You can go to $100.
Okay.
Just like $100.
Yeah.
Then $100. You want to see her. You can find her. She's a good singer.
Okay.
And she's like, she's from Toronto too. Yeah.
Okay. Boy, yeah. You're right downtown, aren't you? Practically.
Huh?
You're right downtown, aren't you? Center Street. This is a main street. I hear the sirens in the background. This is big city living, isn't it?
Who?
You.
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, you hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah, just like Center Street's big.
Yeah. Sounds like my apartment.
Yeah, but big, but it looks empty.
Oh,
like
yeah.
One cent shot, like empty, like...
Mm-hmm. Sounds like my apartment is like 15 hours of the day, big trucks, you know. And there's a hospital at the bottom of the street, so big trucks and ambulances and fire engines.
No, yes, at the street we don't have many things, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Just
it's mostly quiet.
Street, but like...
Yeah.
It's like... Yeah.
Oh, well, you make me homesick when I hear the police sirens. There you go.
I don't know.
Okay. What else do you have to tell us today? How are your spirits?
No, just like we make a plan for Christmas dinner.
In the church?
Yeah, you know what happened? December 8th.
Yeah.
It's going to be a Muslim holiday.
Oh, okay. What is the holiday?
It's like Muslim holiday. It's like the, you know...
What's it called?
They call like Eid.
Eid?
Yeah,
okay.
For like this day, everybody eat lamb, and you know?
Okay.
And yeah, because after, you know, like now, everyone in the Mecca.
Yeah.
And when we finish the days for Mecca for prayer, the last day.
Yeah.
We make big holiday, all the world, like Muslim.
Okay.
And after that, it's Christmas.
Right.
Yeah, it's Christmas for like Christians.
Yeah.
But me and my friend, we decide, because like a Muslim holiday is going to be the 8th, yes?
Yeah.
And now it's going to be the 25th, yeah?
All right.
Christmas.
Yeah.
But me, my friend and I, just today we make it for 13 December.
Okay.
Between, you know?
Okay, yeah.
Not Muslim holiday. It's not Christmas holiday.
Yeah.
Between, and we we make party for the bot.
Good.
But in the middle.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's not like...
Very good.
Yeah, that's what we decided.
So you're going to have a dinner?
We have a big dinner.
Okay.
Big dinner. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Just the two of you?
Hmm?
Just two of you?
No, it's like...
all your friends.
Friends, yeah, many.
All right.
Maybe it's going to be 30.
What is the 13th? What day is that, do you know?
Sure not.
Okay.
Maybe it's not 13. I'm not sure. But I remember it's Saturday. It's Saturday. It's Saturday, maybe 13 or 15, something like that. I don't know.
Oh, okay, so it's Saturday. All right.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds nice. We haven't made we haven't made any plans for Christmas yet, and I know they won't make any plans till a week before. That's my family.
Yeah, because all my friends gonna be done. Yeah, and I have to do one show. I have to do a radio show.
Oh, when's that?
No, no, hold on. Let me explain to you another thing.
Yeah, sure.
I said, no, I explain. And on December 17th,
yeah,
we have a gallery here, okay?
Gallery.
Gallery, like artists.
Yeah, yeah.
They ask me to do music stuff, music.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that.
I mentioned that?
Yeah.
And
but you didn't say the date, yeah.
Yeah, I want to do what just the guy, he want to give me a call, and just the guy who can, like, bring the audios, we can record in here.
Okay.
Yeah, just I want to do, I want to just talk about now, I want to talk relationship between me and the music.
Oh, yeah. And you're gonna do that on the 17th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have a recording of that, actually.
Yeah, I want a recording, yeah.
Okay.
I want to record it. I want to send it to them, like, to put it, like, to play it.
Yeah.
Like, this documentary is going to be, like, talking about myself and, yeah, about how many, like, days I'm here, why I'm here, and I want to talk how the music affect my life, you know?
All right.
It's like, yeah, it's affect, like, help my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to play some music live.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have invitation from a radio from Switzerland.
Really? Switzerland?
Yeah, they asked me to do... You know, this radio, he has connection with 200 radios, okay?
Okay.
And the wall.
Yeah.
And they asked me, they sent me email yesterday, last night, and they asked me if I can, hosting one show.
Very good.
And I sent it to them, and they want to take my show to play it.
Oh, which one? Yeah.
It's I want to play it on 12th. It's a show because, like, I want to do the show 12th December.
Okay.
And I want to send it to them.
Okay.
To play it because this date, because I want to play it on the 18th, because the 18th it's immigrant day.
Which day?
It's immigrant day.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Immigrant day. Yeah.
Well, I could play it on the 18th too, but you've done it for them, so. It would still be interesting to play parts of it. If the 18th is immigrant day, then we should play something of yours.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I want on this day I want give invitation to lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Immigration lawyers.
Yeah.
And doctors.
Yeah.
And some organization who work with immigrants.
Right.
And, like I said, doctors who was with immigrants without a paper.
Okay.
Yeah. And just take 1 hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you can MP3 me that, any part of that, I would be interested in airing it.
Yeah.
But you check your agreement with your Swiss radio so we don't step on their toes.
Yeah, you can check it on 12th on the website, CKOT website.
Oh, it'll be on the CKOT website on the 12th?
It's always my show on security.
Okay.
And the website.
All right.
Just check, like, Hour of Power.
Yes.
Yeah, and you can find the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. All right. We'll do that instead of the interview.
All right, it's going to be talking, but I don't know what's going to be, because Switzerland, like the Francophones, the spa.
Yeah.
I have to do it in French.
Okay. So we'll do more music than we will speech here at this end.
Yeah, but...
I know, I hear you're speaking about your feeling for your music, but we don't have a lot of French speakers in Hamilton. So.
Yeah, but like I said, like, but this documentary, I want to do it in English, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I want to do some part in English, some part in French. And
well, I can air English and French together because, you know, everybody, whether they admit it or not, if they've been to school, they have a little French.
Yeah.
And if there's a little English, then they can get an idea of what's going on.
Yeah, but like I said, like, yeah, you can take what you want and you leave what you want, okay?
All right, yeah.
And what I do with this is I want to send it to you, this whole gallery.
Yeah.
I want to send it to you.
Okay.
I can do it MP3, I want to send it to you when I finish it. For sure, it's going to be before, maybe this month, before this month, I hope.
Okay.
Finish it just before this month, I send it to you.
All right. You have a good week, and we'll talk to you sooner than usual, right? We'll talk to you on Monday.
Yeah. We'll try me for Monday. If not, try me like the same time.
Yeah.
If not, try me another time, but the same day.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I look forward to hearing your new phone.
Like, yeah, just today. I made it to order today. Take another few days, you know?
For sure.
She said to me, from here to 25.
Okay.
Yeah, 25 November, that's what she said.
Something like that. All right.
Yeah, that's what she said. Just like, yeah.
All right, I appreciate that.
Take care.
Take care.
And have a rest week.
Yeah, have a good week too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Otis Spann and Spann Stomp. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at
www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Disrespect is streamed live from CFMU 93.3 at http://cfmu.mcmaster.ca. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.